The man sitting next to her snorted into his cup of wine. Haroon or Andre, whichever one. What a pity for them. First they lose their father, and then they have to marry the ugliest murderess in existence.
Still, it will be good to get the Draculess line under control.
Lada stood. Her chair scraped back loudly. Lada, someone said from the door nearest her. She turned to see Bogdan. Something was wrong. She could see it in his pale face and downturned mouth. She hurried to him. What is it? Come with me. No one called after her. She followed Bogdan down the hall and into the kitchen, where a large wooden table had been cleared of food. It was now laden with a body. Petru's body. Lada stumbled forward. His eyes were closed, his face still. His shirt had been pulled up to reveal a ragged hole of a wound that was no longer bleeding, because his heart no longer pumped. Bogdan turned him gently on his side. The origin of the wound was his back. Someone had stabbed him from behind.
How did this happen?
Lada touched Petru's cheek. It was still warm. He had been with her since Amarcia. She had watched him grow up, into himself, into a man. One of her men. One of her best.
We found him behind the stables, Stefan said.
Were there any witnesses?
Bogdan's voice was grim.
Two Dinesh family guards, who were arguing with him earlier, said they saw and heard nothing. They suggested perhaps he fell on his own sword. Backward.
Lada clenched her jaw. She stared at the body on the table until her vision blurred. Petru was hers. He represented her. And he had been stabbed in the back by men who represented the Dinesh boyars.
Kill the guards. All of them. Not just those two. Then bring my first men, those who have been with us since before we were free, into the dining hall.
Lada turned around. She walked back toward the room holding the Dinesh boyars. Dining with boyars, dealing with hungry, pleading with the Ottomans for aid. Had she become her father this quickly? She slammed through the door, the noise drawing the attention of everyone who had not noticed her absence.
Someone's guards killed one of my men. I want to know who allowed it.
Why? Toma asked.
Because an attack on my men is an attack on me, and I punish treason with death.
Toma grimaced a smile at the table, then leaned close.
I am certain it was a misunderstanding. Besides, you cannot ask for a noble life in exchange for a soldier's.
I can do anything I want, Lada said.
Toma's expression became sharp.
Sit down, he commanded. You are embarrassing me. We will talk about this later.
Lada did not sit.
How many princes have you served under?
Toma narrowed his eyes even more.
I would have to count.
She leaned forward against the table, gesturing toward everyone.
I wish to know how many princes you have all served under.
Four,
the rat-faced boy said with a shrug of his shoulders. Many nodded.
Eight,
another said.
Nine,
someone else countered.
A wizened old man near the back shouted out,
I have you all beat. 21 princes have I seen in my lifetime.
Everyone laughed. Lada laughed loudest and sharpest. She kept laughing long after everyone else stopped, her laugh ringing alone through the room. She laughed until everyone stared at her, confused and pitying. She stopped abruptly, the room echoing with the silence left in the wake of her laughter.
Princes come and go, but you all remain.
Toma nodded.
We are the constants. Valahia depends on us.
Yes, I have seen Valahia. I have seen what your constant care has created.
Lada thought of the fields empty of crops, the roads empty of commerce. The hollow eyes and the hollow stomachs, the boys missing from the fields, their corpses against the walls of Constantinople now, the lands eaten away by Transylvania and Hungary. So many things missing, so many things lost. And always, ever, the boys remained exactly as they were. She, too, had been lost. Sold to another land, for what? For her father to be betrayed and murdered by the men and women in front of her now, eating her food, patting her hand, calculating how long this prince would best serve their needs until they found another. The Dinesh Boyars were a poison that would be her eventual end. In the meantime, they would try to marry her into their families and would siphon the life from her, Valahia. She had promised the people a better country, a stronger country, and now, finally, she understood how to create it. There were no compromises, no gentle pathways. She could not keep power the way anyone else had before her, because she was like no one else before her. Your mistake is in assuming that because I have been far away, I do not understand how things work. She reached over and plucked the knife from beside Toma's plate. I have been far away, and because of that, I understand perfectly how things work. I have learned at the feet of our enemies. I have seen that sometimes the only way forward is to destroy everything that came before. I have learned that if what you are doing is not working, you try something else. She stabbed the knife into the top of the table, embedding it in the wood. Then she looked up to see her men entering the room and lining the walls of the hallway. Who killed my father and brother? And who is responsible for the death of my soldier Petru? I demand justice. No one spoke. Very well. Lock the doors, she said, her voice cold. A murmur arose among the boys. They shifted in their seats, watching as each exit was closed and locked. Finally, they had the sense to look uncomfortable. Finally, they truly saw her. Larda drew her sword, looking down the curve of it. She had thought it like a smile before. Now she saw what it was. A scythe. Without a word, she shifted and plunged it into the chest of Toma. The man who had used we to talk about their plans, when he meant himself and a foreign king. The man who had thought that through words and advice he could take Larda's soldiers, Larda's power, Larda's country, without ever fighting her. She watched his face as he died, committing it to memory. A woman screamed. Several chairs clattered as people hastily stood. Larda pulled her sword from Toma's chest, then gestured to the table. Kill them all, she said. Her men did not move until Bogdan drew his sword and stepped forward, swiftly killing two boyars. Then the work of harvesting began in earnest. Larda picked up a cloth napkin and used it to wipe the blood off the length of her sword. The screams were distracting, but she was used to distractions. Hold hands with the devil until you are both over the bridge. Or kill the devil and burn the bridge, so no one can get to you. It took a few moments for her to notice the screaming had finally stopped. She looked up. Bodies littered the room. Men and women slumped over the table or lay in their blood on the floor where they had tried to escape. Her men had not even broken a sweat. It was good that Radu was not here after all. She did not want him to see this. Maybe it would not have been necessary if he had been here. Maybe together they could have found another way. But he had chosen Mahmed, and she had chosen this. She could not stop now. Larda sheathed her sword. Take the bodies to the courtyard. Everyone needs to know a new Valahia has been born tonight. After they have been displayed, we will give Petru the memorial he deserves. What about their families? Bogdan asked. Kill any Dinesh heirs. They have nothing to inherit now. I will give their titles and land to those who actually serve me. Larda, Nikolai grasped her elbow. His sword was still sheathed. Do not do this. It is already done. But their children. We cut out the corruption so we can grow. I am making Valahia strong. She turned to face him, her eyes as hard as her blade. Do you disagree with me? They killed my family,
They would have killed me too when it suited them. And they wanted us to continue under the Ottomans. They would sell our children to the Turkish armies just like you. Just like Petru.
You know I am right.
Nikolai looked down, scar twisting. Yes, I know. I wish we could have done it another way. But I think you are right. The Dinesh boys would never have supported a new Valachia under you. But their children are innocent. You can afford to show mercy. She remembered the choice Huma made to assassinate Mehmed's infant half-brother to avoid future civil war. Kill a child, save an empire. It was terrible. Sometimes, terrible things were necessary. But unlike Mehmed, who had his vicious mother, no one would make these choices for Lada. No one would save her from this. She had to be strong. Mercy is the one thing I cannot afford. Not yet. When Valachia is stable, when we have rebuilt, then yes. What we do now, we do so that someday Mercy will be able to survive here. But the children... Nikolai's voice was as empty as a boy's promise. You said you would follow me to the ends of the earth. God's wounds, Lada, he whispered, shaking his head. Someday, you will go further than I can follow. He let go of her arm, then grabbed Toma's body and dragged it from the room. She had done what was necessary. She watched as each body was removed. She would mark their passing and acknowledge their unwilling sacrifice. Because with each body they drew closer to her goal. She clutched her locket so tightly that her fingers ached. She was a dragon. She was a prince. She was the only hope Valachia had of ever prospering. And she would do whatever it took to get there. 51. To Lada Dracul, Vaivode of Valachia, beloved sister. Constantinople has fallen. Mehmed is Sultan, Emperor, Caesar of Rome, the new Alexander. He has united East and West in his new capital. As his vassal, I ask your presence to celebrate his victory and to negotiate new terms for Valachia's taxes and Yanacheri contributions. He wishes to see you, as do I. I think of you often and wonder whether I chose right after all. Please come. Mehmed will offer you good terms, and I dearly wish to spend time with you. I have much to talk about with you. Your visit is eagerly anticipated. With all my love and the official order of the Sultan, Emperor, and Caesar of Rome, Radu Pasha. 52. To Radu, my brother, I do not acknowledge your new title, nor Mehmed's. Tell the lying coward I send no congratulations. He sent none to me when I took my throne in spite of him. You did not choose right. Tell Mehmed, Valachia is mine. With all defiance, Lada Dracul, Prince of Valachia. Dramatis Personae. Draculest family, Valachian nobility. Vlad Dracul, deceased Vaivode of Valachia, father of Lada and Radu, father of Machia, husband of Vasilisa. Vasilisa, mother of Lada and Radu, princess of Moldavia. Machia, deceased oldest son of Vlad Dracul and his first deceased wife. Lada, daughter and second legitimate child of Vlad Dracul. Radu, son and third legitimate child of Vlad Dracul. Vlad,
illegitimate son of Vlad Dracul, with a mistress. Valachian court and countryside figures. Nurse. Wana, mother of Bogdan, childhood caretaker of Lada and Radu.
Bogdan,
son of the nurse, childhood best friend of Lada. Andre, boyar from rival Dinesh family, son of the replacement prince. Aron, brother of Andre. Dinesh family, rival family for the Valachian throne. Darciana, peasant girl living under a Dinesh boyar's rule. Toma Bazarab, boyar from Bazarab family. Ottoman court figures. Murad, deceased Ottoman sultan, father of Mahmed. Halima, one of Murad's wives, mother of murdered infant, heir, Ahmet. Mara Bronkovic, one of Murad's wives, returned to Serbia. Huma, deceased mother of Mahmed and concubine of Murad. Mahmed, the Ottoman Sultan. Halil Vizier, formerly Halil Pasha, an important advisor in the Ottoman courts, whose loyalties are to Constantinople. Salih, the second son of Halil Vizier, formerly a friend of Radu. Kumal, devout bey in Mahmed's inner circles, brother of Nazira, brother-in-law and friend to Radu. Nazira, Radu's wife in name only, Kumal's sister. Fatima, Nazira's maid in name only. Amal, a young servant who has aided Radu and Mahmed in the past. Suleiman, the admiral of the Ottoman Navy. Timur, an Ottoman citizen working for Mahmed. Tohin, an Ottoman citizen expert in gunpowder, mother of Timur. Urbana of Transylvania, an expert in cannons and artillery. Lada Dracul's inner military circle. Matei, an experienced former Yanacheri, one of Lada's oldest men. Nikolai, Lada's closest friend. Petru, Lada's youngest soldier from the Yanacheri troop. Stefan, Lada's best spy. The Hungarian court. John Hunyadi, Hungary's most brilliant military commander, responsible for Vlad Dracul's and Macias' deaths. Matthias, John Hunyadi's son, high up in court politics. Elizabeth, the mother of the young king, Ladislaus Postumus. Ladislaus Postumus, the ill young king. Auric, the king's regent, advisor, and protector. Constantinople court figures. Constantine, the emperor of Constantinople. John, the heir of Constantinople, nephew of Constantine. Manuel, John's brother, nephew of Constantine. Coco, an important naval captain. Cyprian, an ambassador for the court, bastard nephew of Constantine. Giustiniani, an Italian, Constantine's most important military advisor. Helen, a citizen of Constantinople, Coco's mistress and Nazira's friend. Glossary. Bey, a governor of an Ottoman province. Boyars, Valachian nobility. Censer, a metal ball with slits or small holes into which one puts burning incense, then swings through the air on a chain, used during religious processions and worship. concubine, a woman who belongs to the Sultan and is not a legal wife, but could produce legal heirs. Dracul, dragon, also devil, as the terms were interchangeable. Fosse, a ditch dug around the exterior of Constantinople's walls to prevent easy attack. Galata, a city-state across the Golden Horn from Constantinople, ostensibly neutral. Galley, a warship of varying size, with sails and oars for maneuvering in battle. Golden Horn, the body of water surrounding one side of Constantinople, blocked off by a chain and nearly impossible to launch an attack from. Greek fire, a method of spraying compressed liquid fire known only to the Greeks and highly effective in battles. Hagia Sophia, a cathedral built at the height of the Byzantine era, the jewel of the Christian world. Harem, a group of women consisting of wives, concubines, and servants that belongs to the Sultan. Oceitria, a holy relic said to have been painted by an apostle and used for religious protection in Constantinople. Infidels, a term used for anyone who does not practice the religion of the speaker. Irregulars, soldiers in the Ottoman Empire who are not part of officially organized troops, often mercenaries or men looking for spoils. Yanacheri, a member of an elite force of military professionals, taken as boys from other countries, converted to Islam, educated and trained to be loyal to the Sultan. Liturgy, religious worship performed in Latin or Greek, depending on whether the church is Catholic or Orthodox. Meter, loud music performed by Yanacheri troops as they attack, extremely effective at demoralizing and disorienting enemy troops. Order of the Dragon, order of crusaders anointed by the Pope. Pasha, a noble in the Ottoman Empire appointed by the Sultan. Pashazada, a son of a Pasha. Postern, a small gate designed to let troops in and out of Constantinople through the inner walls. Regent, an advisor appointed to help rule on behalf of a king too young to be fully trusted. Rumeli Hisar, a fortress built on one side of the Bosporus Strait as companion to the Anadolu Hisar. Spahi, a military commander in charge of local Ottoman soldiers called up during war. Transylvania, a small country bordering Wallachia and Hungary, includes the cities of Brasov and Sibiu. Trebuchet, a medieval engine of war with a sling for hurling large stones. Vivode, warlord prince of Wallachia. Vassal state, a country allowed to retain rulership but subject to the Ottoman Empire, with taxes of both money and slaves for the army. Vizier, a high-ranking official, usually advisor to the Sultan. Wallachia, a vassal state of the Ottoman Empire, bordered by Transylvania, Hungary, and Moldavia. Author's note. Please see the author's note in And I Darken for more information on resources for further study on the fascinating lives of Vlad Tepes, Mehmed II, and Radu Çelfrumos. As a note in this book, I would like to personally apologize to the nation of Hungary and its incredible history. The Hunyadi family legacy is worthy of its own trilogy, but in the interest of not writing 3,000-page-long books, I had to dramatically simplify and compress things to suit my narrative needs. In the end, these books are works of fiction. I try to incorporate as much history as respectfully as I can and encourage anyone intrigued to further study this time period and region. The characters in the series each interact with religion, and more specifically, Islam, in various ways. I have nothing but respect for the rich history and beautiful legacy of that gospel of peace. Individual characters' opinions on the complexities of faith both Islamic and Christian, do not reflect my own. Spelling varies between languages and over time, as do place names. Any errors or inconsistencies are my own. Though the main characters speak a variety of languages, I made an editorial decision to present all common terms in English. This is Fiona Hardingham. We hope you have enjoyed this unabridged production of Now I Rise by Kirsten White. This program was directed by Danny Campbell. Executive producer, Kelly Gilday. Text copyright 2017 by Kirsten Brazier. Production copyright 2017, Penguin Random House, LLC. All rights reserved.
Audible hopes you have enjoyed this program.